Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, see if they get a little mojo off that as they take on the other quote-unquote New York, New Jersey team.
Yeah.
The Jets this weekend. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. How you doing this morning?
I'm good.
How was the Fat Tony show last night?
It was a good time. Got to react to the college football playoff poll for the first time, and it's pretty clear at this point that the committee hates the Big 12 and will continue to hate the Big 12 and that style of football from here on out. I know we're not going to get into it. It's Jaguars talk coming up here. But the idea that anybody's watched a lot of college football this year and thinks there are five teams in the country better than Baylor is patently absurd.
Well, look, like you said, we're not going to delve too far afield from what we typically do here with the Jags in the National Football League, but it reminds me, Tony, how nice it is not to have to care so much, you know, that we don't cover that,
and
at least on this show. You talk about it somewhat on Tuesday nights. I don't have to talk about it at all anymore, and the absurdities of the college football system, even with the 14 playoff, that just, and trust me, no love lost for the Florida Gators here, right? But how can Florida dismantle Ole Miss? Ole Miss can beat Bama in Tuscaloosa, and Alabama can be in the college football playoff right now if the season ended today?
And Florida's only loss is to a team that's number two.
Doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And everyone's like, it'll all play out, it'll all play out. Yeah, but
that's what Baylor and TCU kept saying last year,
That's what they said last year, right? And what happens is it plays out, but if you're behind, something's got to change over the course of the rest of the way. And I understand, well, Alabama and Florida both can't win out. They'd have to meet in the SEC title game if that happened. But not every scenario is as clean cut as that, clear cut.
Certainly not, no.
Whatever. That's, again, a sport that is a half step from gymnastics when it comes to determining a championship, honestly. Let me hold up my card and tell you, doesn't matter what actually happens, here's what I think should have happened. Have these teams played again, Tony? That's how people vote in college football. And we're glad that it doesn't pollute the National Football League. Today, however, we'll give you subjectivity today. Oh, yeah. We'll load you up with subjectivity today. We would like you today, for the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day, to weigh in either on the Twitter, on the Facebook, on the text line, or on the phone lines, and we'll give you all those out to you in a moment, and give your grades, and you can break it down beyond this, but we want at least a grade for the offense, a grade for the defense, and a grade for the special teams. And you can factor in, take into account maybe expectations, if you want to, where you thought they would be. I'll say this, I think most Jag fans would have signed up if you told them, coming off a season where they averaged 15.6 last year, that if they were averaging 21 points a game this year, that would be a pretty significant step in the right direction. And Blake Bortles' touchdown to interception ratio has been a positive, I think, as well for this football team. Now, there are flaws on that side of the ball as well. We'll talk about them. The Jags defensively are right around the two-thirds mark in terms of yardage allowed to opponents this year. I think they're 21st in the league in terms of yardage allowed defensively, but they're second in the league in points allowed. And I understand that defensive scores factor into that as well, so the pick sixes kind of count against you in that category. There are not enough of them to make me feel good about the 29.6 points per game that the Jaguars have given up on average this year, second only to the Detroit Lions, giving up 30.6. So that is a catastrophically high number at this point in time for that side of the football. And special teams, well, we've talked about their issues, whether it's with punt coverage, whether it's with kicking accuracy at times, and, you know, with injuries in the return game, the big return element has kind of disappeared as well. We saw, you know, Rashad Green give us a little bit of hope early on, and Corey Grant, both of those guys hurt. Rashad Green eligible to come back to practice today, as a matter of fact, and hopefully we'll get a chance to catch up with senior writer from Jaguars.com, John Osier, later to find out exactly what is going on out at practice. But it hasn't all exactly gone swimmingly, let's put it that way.
No, it certainly hasn't, and I'm looking at the numbers from last year, at least defensively, briefly, and the Jags were 26th as far as yardage allowed, 26th in points as well, 25.8 points a game they gave up defensively last year, so the number this year is a little bit worse than it was last year. And you can remember this team, the offense let them down so much in the 2014 season. There was a span there of 4 or 5 weeks where if the offense gave them anything, you felt like they could have won all 4 or 5 of those games. Now, they wound up winning or losing a bunch of those games by 2 scores anyway because the offense was just putrid at times last year for this Jaguars team. Well, the offense is better in 2015 than it was in 2014, and the defense just hasn't found a way to keep them in some of these games to this point this year. And Blake Bortles has continued to throw those pick sixes. It's kind of the combination of all those things and the disappointment for the Jaguars fans and what has happened to this point in the season is stemming from not only that those things continue to happen, but they continue to happen in games this year against Tampa as opposed to Pittsburgh.
Right.
Right, where, okay, they hung in there with Pittsburgh. That's a pretty good football team. You feel okay about that with your first-year quarterback. Second-year quarterback in this team going on, you do that against Tampa, you're going, what the hell is going on? Like, that's just the idea in fans' minds, and I think it's a fair one.
Yeah, I think it is as well. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey and Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. If you'd like to get in today, love to take your calls at 641-1010. Not only on the overall grades for the units, offense, defense, special teams, but if you want to get into some individuals as well, is Blake Bortles wildly exceeding your expectations, or are his pick sixes going to cause you to grade him a little bit more harshly than some other? Others might. That's certainly your prerogative. If you want to get into any of the individual spots or a couple of individual players and whether or not they're living up to your expectations as well, kind of the midseason. And for the Jags, they have one more game to go before the season is halfway over. But with the bye week in the rear view, from this point forward, we're going to be into game week mode. Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union scheduled to join us tomorrow, and we'll kind of go through his midseason grades as well for this football team. But give us your thoughts on that today at 641-1010, and also text us at that same number on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. That is your question of the day today, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Grades for the offense, defense, and special teams. Tweet us at MD_1010XL and at 1010XL Fat Tony. And, of course, the Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business as well. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Back with more Jags Today live at EverBank in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Metro Rooter brings you Jaguars Today every Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at EverBank on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Tony, apparently, got the click publish on my the Facebook post, so all the Facebook people waiting for the question of the day are just dismayed right now. But I will remedy that immediately. Right now, as we're looking for your grades today on the offense, on the defense, on the special teams. Do you factor in, if you're going to grade Blake Bortles,
okay,
do you factor in what your expectation was and if he's exceeding that, or do you just try to look at it and say, okay, here he is, he's a quarterback in the National Football League, and I'm going to grade him on that? Or are you going to factor in, well, he's a second-year quarterback, and you're going to take into account, you know, maybe some of the injuries around him or the inexperience or whatever? How when you're trying to grade him, can you grade him on the same basis that you would grade Tom Brady or Drew Brees or one of these other longtime established guys?
No, I don't think that's quite fair yet to put him on that same kind of scale. Like, I don't directly compare Blake Bortles to Tom Brady as far as my expectations for him coming into the year, because first, Tom Brady's on a much better team. He's surrounded by so much on that team, and he's been in an offense that he's been able to be comfortable in for a decade and a half. That's a completely different expectation for a guy like Tom Brady than it is for Blake Bortles. I do grade him against the expectations I had coming into the season and whether or not I feel like he's living up to that. And is he growing as a quarterback? And I think with that in mind, he gets a bit of a higher grade, I think, than the pick sixes probably should allow him to get for me, because I do think the numbers in the end are better than I expected them to be at this point in the season. The costly mistakes are still there, and hopefully those go away very soon. Like during the bye week, they left forever, the costly mistakes that Blake Bortles was making. But I think you can look at Blake and what he's done in this offense, his first year in this offense, in the first 7 weeks of this season. You can clearly see the growth he's had, and statistically it's backed up by not only his touchdown numbers and the yardage numbers, but by when you look at total QBR, which is a stat I really like, he is vastly improved from where he was last year.
A couple weeks ago, he was the most improved starting quarterback in the National Football League. I don't know if that has held up over the last couple weeks as well. Derek Carr was right behind him, by the way, and I don't think he hurt his chances of improving last week with a four-touchdown performance. And I think it is fair, Tony, to judge him, certainly, Blake Bortles, against the quarterbacks that were in his class, because those teams, although they didn't select quarterbacks in the first round, they had high first round picks when the Jags had the high pick to select Bortles. Those teams were taking players in the top 10 of the NFL draft. They just opted to go a different direction. They went defense in the first round and went with the quarterback in the second round, but I think it is fair to compare them. And in terms of wins and losses, he's not going to hold up as well. That's not the only measuring stick. It isn't a measuring stick, certainly, of quarterbacks, but honestly, boy, Derek Carr, 15 touchdowns against only 3 interceptions. That is, to me, pretty amazing, the statistical jump that he has made. He threw 21 touchdowns last year as a rookie, where Blake only threw 10. I mean, Blake's taken a huge jump as well. He's already thrown 50% more TDs this year than he did all of last season. And the interceptions, while they're still a little bit high, they're not ridiculous compared to the amount of production that he's getting. You can live with some turnovers if you're putting the ball in the end zone. The issue for him, the turnovers have too often led to immediate points for the other football team. But you look at Derek Carr, Tony, he's completing 65.5% of his passes, 15 touchdowns, and only 3 picks this year. He's thrown for 1,793 yards. That is through 7 games as well. They played 7 games just like the Jags had. Bortles completing about 10% less of his passes, 55.7. That's a low number, and that's down over 3 points from last year. He was at 58.9, and typically, you're in that range, that doesn't bode well for you long term. Now, obviously there's some things that can offset that to some degree. He's certainly had some drops, but I would imagine every quarterback has their share of drops around the National Football League.
They do, and I think it's a picture of, and it's why Blake gets in trouble sometimes still too, is it feels like everything with Blake is deep to short. Right, where he is really aggressive with the football, and it gets him in trouble from time to time. And there hasn't been much of a Blake looks one, two, those options out there, let me check it down. Like, you don't see a whole lot of that from Blake. It's more he's on one. If one's not there, then he's going to take a shot. Like, that just seems to be the guy Blake is at this point, and I think that the completion percentage would go up significantly if he would learn to check it down every now and then and take 4 yards as opposed to trying to get 20. Now, it's working out for Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson because they're making big plays in this offense because he's continuing to give them opportunities to make plays downfield, but I think the offense will be more effective when Blake starts to check it down a little bit to Yeldon and Julius Thomas or whoever that outlet's going to be for them going forward.
Teddy Bridgewater continues to complete around 65% of his passes, 64.5, but he's not putting the ball in the end zone. He's got Adrian Peterson to turn to and hand the ball to. He's only thrown 6 touchdowns against 5 picks. That's nowhere near the percentage that you're looking for your starting quarterback, and that's through 7 games as well. So to me, while they're winning football games, I think he's been more of a caretaker quarterback and been asked to be more of a caretaker quarterback than Blake Bortles, who's, frankly, when your team's giving up nearly 30 a game, you've got to go out there and probably take more risks than a guy whose team seems to be in the game every single week, lower scoring type games like the Minnesota Vikings have had for the most part.
And the Jags haven't run the ball particularly well.
No, so with the exception of two outings.
Right, so it's mostly been on Blake.
Right. 6-4-1-10-10 if you'd like to get in today, looking for your grades on the offense, defense, and special teams here at kind of the midway point of the season. Let's start with DJ on the south side this morning. Good morning, DJ. How are you?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
What's up?
Hey, I want to get a chance to thank y'all because I'm an Oakland Raiders fan, and I'm so glad y'all didn't draft Amari Cooper. Oh, my God.
All right, DJ.
He's gonna have Derek Carr on his way to Hall of Fame. He's that good.
Well, I'll say this, and I'm glad you're happy with Amari Cooper. The Jags don't have an issue at wide receiver right now. I mean, that hasn't, for whatever issues they've had this year, it hasn't been because of lack of playmaking at the wide receiver position. Would Amari Cooper be better than Allen Hurns? Possibly so. Probably so. I think he's a more talented guy.
Yeah.
But Allen Hurns' production would, if not disappear, be greatly reduced from what it is right now in this offense. I don't know if this offense would be all that much better, quite frankly, as well as Hurns has played this year. Hurns has probably been their most consistent receiver, game in, game out, when called upon to deliver for this football team. He'd be the guy you'd be taking out for Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper's a great player. There's no question about it.
But no doubt. I think that you're seeing the decision that they made in this year's draft with that number three pick to not take a wide receiver because of the faith that they had in the guys that they had drafted the year before and brought in. And maybe, look, Marquise Lee hadn't even been able to be on the field basically for him this year, but Robinson and Hurns, you've seen the growth from those two guys. Doesn't mean they wouldn't be better with Amari Cooper. He makes you better because he's a great player and he's a blooming, blossoming player in this league. So yeah, they'd be better. But for all the fans that are still on this Amari Cooper thing, if I talk to you for 5 minutes about the problems with this Jacksonville team, the number one problem most fans will point out is the fact that they can't rush the passer.
Of course they will.
They tried to fix that or at least address it, which is why they took Dante Fowler. Now, did they take the right guy? We don't know. He's hurt. You're not going to see him in 2015. You're not going to see him on the field until 2016. That'll be his second year in the league. You're just not going to see it. But did they make the right or wrong decision? I'm waiting to see what Dante Fowler Jr. looks like as an NFL player before I tell you whether or not I think they made the right decision. I agreed with the call they made to take Dante Fowler. I still agree with that call because every week I'm watching this team completely unable to get pressure on the quarterback. And that is their biggest Achilles heel right now, is that they cannot affect the other team's quarterback. It's not problems with them being able to pass the ball.
Right. But in terms of for today, you know, when you're grading the defense, hey, you know what? I'm not going to give them an incomplete or I'm not going to give them a pass.
No.
For not having Dante Fowler Jr. All
no.
you can do is grade how well have the guys who've been on the field played so far this year. They're giving up way too many points. That's the bottom line. Too many points. And, you know, at times, look, for the most part, the run defense has been okay. I don't think it's been bad. But against Tampa, it was bad. Now, Paul Posluszny didn't play that game, but you've got to have guys that can step in and get the job done. And the pass defense has been shaky all year long. And they've given up too many big plays, and a direct result of that is, or it comes in part as a direct result of what you're talking about, Tony, the lack of pressure up front. They go hand in hand. There's no question about it, and they've had their struggles in every phase of the game. It's not like they've been perfect offensively. Like you said, they've gone through stretches where they can't run the ball at all on this football team. They've been competitive. No one is saying that's enough. I do think they're a better team than they were last year. You look at the numbers, particularly you look at the promise on the offensive side, it's hard not to feel that way. But it's interesting because last year the defense was better than it is right now, right? Even if the sack total was a little bit inflated, we keep hearing about that you know, high percentage of the time that they got pressure, they resulted in sacks. It was unsustainable. Fine, whatever. The end result is they got 45 sacks last year, and overall the defense was probably better. The offense was significantly worse. Yet it's funny because when you have an offense that can score points, before when you fell behind the game was over, even if it was a low scoring game, it just gives you the feeling, I think, that the team is better. People would rather see good offense, bad defense than vice versa most times, unless you've got such a dominant defense that you're winning games 10-6 all the time. We've seen that happen on occasion, but it's rare in today's NFL that you can put together a unit like that.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's fair for comparing, like you said, I think you can compare Blake Bortles specifically to the guys he came in with, right? Like Carr and Bridgewater, I think it's fair to look at what those two guys are doing in the league, and even Mariota and Winston, because that's the choice the Jags made. They looked at basically those five quarterbacks the Jaguars did in the draft 2 years ago and said, we think Bortles is the best of any of these options. And so we're going to take him because we're in position to take him now. This is the guy that we believe in the most. So that's what Caldwell did. He said, Bortles is my guy. I think it's fair to look at the decision the Jaguars made to go with Bortles, and then they follow up the next year with Fowler and with the two receivers in the second round of last year's draft, and compare that to what the Raiders did, where they got Khalil Mack and Carr, and then this year they follow that up with Amari Cooper. Who's better off in the long run? You know, with whichever strategy, who's better off in the long run with how they played out those two drafts? We don't know yet because I don't think it's fair with Fowler not on the field to compare him to what's sure. going on there in Oakland. But when he gets on the field and you look at how those two drafts worked out, I think that's where the judgment on Caldwell is going to come ultimately. Is Bortles the guy? Right? Is he a franchise difference-making quarterback for this football team going forward? It's going to be whether or not he's here in 2017 and beyond or not.
All right, we got to take a break. 641-1010 if you want to get in. We'll check in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line coming up as well. And Johnny O will stop by. John Osier from Jaguars.com will pop in next, and we'll get him to put pen to paper and assigning some grades for this team at kind of the midseason point, although 8 games still not in the books yet.
That's the bye.
With the bye week over with, we're ready to turn the page and talk about some week-to-week matchups from this point forward. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars Today continues in a moment with John Osier on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, time to bring in the resident school mom as it's grading day. John Osher, Jaguars.com senior writer.
Maybe we need a substitute.
Cracking knuckles with a ruler all day long. He walks by Shadrick's office. He's always whacking him with a ruler. It's amazing. I don't know.
Substitute everybody takes advantage of.
Are you?
Yeah.
That guy, because you're a nice guy.
All eight.
You're a nice guy. You don't really want to be here. You don't really want to work. You're kind of, all right, they called me. I'm on the list. I'll show up and, you know, clock a few hours.
I want to be here with you, Mike.
Oh, here,
yeah.
But, you know, as a substitute
cool. Sure.
In the
yeah,
class.
I got you. I hear you.
It's like, hey, man, I'd rather be sitting at home binge watching, you know, whatever CW show I missed this weekend.
Yeah.
That's how you roll.
Binge watching Curb Your Enthusiasm this
week. Have you?
Yeah.
I never really got into it. It's a good show. Good. I like it, but it's not one that I dedicated enough time to really get into.
It's good.
All right,
Jeff.
I'm glad you enjoy it. Johnny, we are giving out some grades. Not to get too far afield before we do that. This is not. There's nothing perfect about this comparison. I know there are a lot of people, like a caller brought up a moment ago, from a Raider perspective, boy, are we glad the Jags didn't draft Amari Cooper. Well, I'm sure you're glad you have Amari Cooper. Yeah. No question about it. That's not what's holding the Jags back.
Right.
You know, you look at the comparison. If Amari Cooper were here, we can presume he and Allen Robinson would be your top two receivers on this football team. Fair to say?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so then let's compare him to Allen Hurns and what kind of production Hurns has gotten as the number two in Jacksonville compared to Cooper being the number one in Oakland. And Cooper's been targeted 59 times in 7 games compared to 51 for Hurns. So pretty comparable. Mm-hmm. Cooper's caught 38 of those targets compared to 31. So he's been targeted 8 more times, caught 7 of them. That's a good percentage, but sure. Within line. Cooper has 565 yards. And Hurns has 513, which I don't have their average in front of me. Probably Hurns probably slightly ahead of him, just based on those numbers catches. Hurns has scored 5 touchdowns. Cooper scored 3. So each of them has a slight statistical advantage somewhere. They're basically, productivity-wise, I'm not saying Cooper's not a better player. I think Cooper has a chance to be a really special wide receiver.
Absolutely.
But I think let's not knock what Allen Hurns has been able to do just because he's an undrafted free agent. He has proven that he can be a playmaker at the NFL level and has been now for a season and a half the most reliable pass catcher this football team has had.
And as we discussed during the break, it's awfully hard to look back and say, boy, David Caldwell really missed by trying to get a pass rusher this offseason.
Tony just made that point.
Because they're set there. You know, I mean, so yes, there's no question that Amari Cooper in this offense would have made the offense better. I think Dave Caldwell would say, yeah, Amari Cooper's a great player. Love to have him. At the expense of trying to fix the pass rush and trying to get that guy for long term, I don't know.
I think it's easier for the Amari Cooper supporters to bring it up because you're not getting an impact from Dante Fowler Jr.
But that's, I don't know how you predict fix that. So I get that that's going to be a debate. I get that's going to be questions I get in the ozone. I'll continue to get it as long as Amari Cooper's in the NFL, which is fine. But when you're sitting and planning out the draft and planning how to build your team and you're looking long term, you've got to pick spots and you've got to try to get premium players at impact positions, and pass rusher is one of those, and you can't control if the guy's going to have an ACL or not. So sure, it'd be great to have him. right now he'd be more productive for this team than Dante Fowler is, because Dante Fowler's not playing.
Right.
But I don't know how you criticize the decision-making process.
Right. How much better overall would the offense be? Probably a little bit. I mean, it would be. I think Amari Cooper would be a better player. He may be better than Allen Robinson is as well. But, you know, he wouldn't take his spot in the lineup. They'd both be on the field. So, regardless, I mean, look, I'm not trying to redraft the draft. I would have been happy with Amari Cooper. I would have been happy with Leonard Williams. You know, right. I'm not unhappy that they chose Dante
Fowler. If the Raiders
Fowler
had
Jr.
taken Dante Fowler and he was healthy and getting eight and had
right, let's say he had six and a half sacks right now, right.
They'd be happy with it.
You
know, so
sure you would.
It's the draft. It's,
sure
you know,
would.
It's
that is, by the
it's
way,
hard
that is
over
not
the last
week
2 years.
Draft talk, just to be clear.
No,
that is retro draft talk. That
it's hard over the last
Tony.
2 years to really say that they haven't targeted and done pretty well in the draft right now.
Over the last 3 years?
Two years. Well, I mean, I'll take 2013 out of it because we're still waiting on Jokel and Ciprian, I think, to a degree.
Right.
But 14 and 15, Yeldon, Cam, I mean, that 15 draft class, I still think has a chance to be pretty good. So,
oh, I think so, too.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of incompletes, as you're
sure.
going to get with young players. I mean, even Blake Bortles is an incomplete
sure.
right now. And we're, you know.
But with Blake, I think you're to the point where I don't think we can look at it. I'm actually writing about this that this week. I don't think you look at him and say, I know he's going to be elite. I think you look at him and think, I don't think he's going to be bad.
I think that's fair.
So, considering that they drafted him knowing that there was development to be made and knowing there was going to be a process, I think so far I would guess he has improved and has reached the point pretty much that they thought he would be at this point. So I think that's looking more and more like at least a hit.
Let me ask both of you.
Maybe not a home run yet.
Tony, starting with you. Has Blake exceeded your expectations this year?
Yes, but it's to a small degree for me, because I actually did think he was going to throw mid to high 3,000s and kind of that mid to high 20s. Like, that's what my expectation was for Blake this year, and he's on pace to be above that at this point in the season, so yes.
What about you, John?
Yeah, because this time last year, it was hard. It was a reach to look at him and say, boy, he is going to be good next year, because he was really struggling. The stats weren't there. There were glimpses, but you had to really put faith in those glimpses, and football people in this building did, but it was a hard sell. Right now, you look at it through seven games, there are still the hiccups. There's still the pick sixes the other way. There's eight interceptions, which he has to reduce, and there's those little periods during when they're going through them, but there's the long stretches of three and outs that you're like, boy, that's damaging when it's happening. But I think there are more cases. The good is outweighing the bad. And for where he was last year, that's a significant step.
What, you know, the worry for me is his completion percentage has gone down.
Mm-hmm.
And 55.7 is not
right.
the territory that's going to win you a lot of championships, you know, from your quarterback. And I think it is fair. It's not the only comparison you need to make. He needs to be compared to his own development. And like you said, when you look at where he was last year to where he is now, I think he has clearly
right.
taken a step in my eyes as well. I agree with you guys. But when you compare him to guys like Carr and Bridgewater, and I think those are fair mm-hmm. comparisons, that, you know, Carr has taken a big step forward, it looks like, this year. His TD interception ratio is 15-3. And the biggest improvement he's made is he's forcing the ball downfield successfully.
Right.
He's up to 7.8 yards per attempt. Blake is still at 6.7, up from 6 as a rookie, but not
right.
even Teddy Bridgewater, who I see as more of a game manager,
right.
is averaging over 7 yards per attempt with that football team. He's just not getting the touchdown passes to go with it. And obviously they're winning. That is impacted by a lot of other factors around them.
Still a ways to go, but I guess when you look at just what a struggle everything was offensively. And I always said last year it was so hard to pinpoint one thing, so hard to say this is 8% of the problem, this is X percent of the problem. You know, when you consider that at the end of the last year, so little of that book had been written, that now when you look at the improvement made through seven games, there's something there that he has a knack for playing big when it matters. I just think he's made the improvement to the point where it's a lot more reasonable to think he's going to be good than it was this time last year.
What's your overall grade for the offense off the top of your head?
What would you B minus in that range. Maybe grade on a little bit of a curve because of where they came from last year. That I think you have to be encouraged with some things. The fact the last couple of weeks, in two of his last three starts, Yeldon's run for 100. That's a half step forward. That, you know, they still clearly need to get better run blocking, or else we wouldn't have the short yardage issue we've been talking about for the last 2 weeks. So it's not perfect, but it's certainly made an improvement. They seem to have gotten better in the red zone a little bit as time has gone on. But I mean, it's not an A because you're not, I don't think you could go win a 38-35 shootout every week, but I think it's better.
Yeah, and it's trending in a better direction as well. I got to believe that Blake and Julius Thomas will get on the same page as the season goes along.
Right.
And have him be more of a consistent producer.
When you consider
for
that they're
team.
Playing, base, I don't say without Julius Thomas, but he's had one game where he's been really as productive as you thought he would be.
One game where he's really made a positive
yeah.
impact.
And they're still playing without Rashad Greene, without Marquise Lee, without Brandon Linder. All those things sound like excuses I get. But when you consider that they're playing without those guys and are still, you know, as I think people would have said that Blake had a bad game against Buffalo. I think that was
yes.
And that said, they still had three touchdown drives and another one where they got to the one. So four pretty productive drives. Bad games last year were 9-3 and outs.
Right.
So offensively, in that sense, that's a fairly significant improvement with still a long way to go.
Right, and that's the key, because you don't only want to compare yourself to the
absolutely not.
Wretched lows of the last several years.
Which they
right?
wouldn't. We're doing that, and I'm just saying, based on if you're looking at a young offense that's developing and looking for signs, you know, for 3 or 4 years, we were sitting in, I mean, not sitting in here, but we talked about the Jaguars, we were talking about, well, the same thing they were last year. Well, they're not that this year on offense, and it's still a long way to go.
They're not that on defense either. Maybe going the other direction. What kind of grade off the top of your head do you give for the defense overall?
You know, it's hard to give it much more than a low C, high D, just because there has been that lack of a pass rush has made it difficult for them to get off the field in key situations. Statistically, they're not bad. In terms of yards and
not right, great,
no, but probably not D bad in terms of yards, but it just hasn't felt like they've been able to close enough games.
Right. I would probably
and
put
them
more in the D
that.
Category
yeah.
for me, you know, because look, they've had moments in
yeah.
their victories, you know, the Jared Odrick making plays late against Miami to help
Tell
seal
them
that
with
game.
The, with the breakup against Miami,
look,
I mean,
the defense scored a bunch against Buffalo and then was able to close them out. Yes, I understand they let them back in the game as well.
But defenses would tell you they have to close in big moments when it matters. Against Carolina, they didn't. Against Tampa Bay, they gave up way too much against the run. There were too many times where they haven't gotten it done when they wanted to get it done. They would tell you there's flashes, but you got to get big stops. And in some of the losses, they didn't.
Special teams.
Boy, it's tough to give it anything more than a D.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been, and you just don't have any of those moments where you think, wow, won him that game. Myers is 53-yarder against Miami, maybe, but it's hard, you know, with six missed kicks there, it's hard to give it a very good grade.
No, I agree with you. I mean, look, they've had kicking issues, they've had punt coverage issues, they've lost the explosive brief element they had in the return game due to injury with Corey Grant, with Rashad
right.
Green. So, you know, I agree with you overall.
It's the punt coverage that probably brings that down as much as anything. You know, that just hasn't been there, and there's really hasn't been that many sniffs of, as you said, it can really give you 30 or 40 yards sometimes that you don't expect, and it hasn't done that enough.
Right. All right, what do you have coming up on .com Live today?
We'll be going live 11:45 before Bortles, and then
you're
JP.
You're always trying
to
eat it to my last 5 minutes. You're unbelievable like that.
11:50. We will steal some turf
split
around
the audience,
here.
Man.
We really will. But and then JP will be joined by Denard Robinson. So. Always good to talk to Denard. Entertaining and
he's always
very
fun.
Likeable
yeah,
kid.
He's a good guy, and you expect more of a role for him this week. Couldn't be less of a role than he had against Buffalo.
It's an interesting dilemma they have because you want to. You're in a position now where if you're going to get him the ball, you have to create things to get him the ball because TJ's playing well enough that I don't think you automatically put Denard in there for just every third series, every fourth series, because TJ's playing so well. So that leads to, can we create situations to get Denard the ball? He's fast enough, explosive enough that you want to do that, but it's trickier than your normal rotation that you would normally have, where you have three or four guys. I mean,
which ultimately is not a bad problem to have. You know, that means your primary guy, who you want to be your primary guy, is doing enough and has the stamina enough to take all those extra reps and stay out on the football field. And ultimately, that's what you want to feature back to be, the guy you can rely on. All right, John Osier, everybody, at John Osier on Twitter, the senior writer for Jaguars.com. Jaguars.com live goes live at about 11:45 this morning,
or as early as we can to make your life.
I would tune in now and just keep hitting refresh until
at the expense
it pops
of radio.
Up. Yeah, quite right.
Would
turn
never
the radio
do that.
Down,
I would never
hit
do that.
Refresh over and over on Jaguars.com, and John will tell you what you missed for the last 45-50 minutes or so. Thank you, bud.
All right, guys. Thank you.
All right, we'll see you later on in the week. There he goes, John Osier. Oh knows Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony coming back. We've got this state in football. We've got the Honda drive around the NFL. We'll take your calls as well at 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars Today continues on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Bob Roberts First Coast Roofing on this date, November 4th, 1984. Tony, you think you've got pick six problems. Seattle set an NFL record by returning four interceptions for touchdowns.
Holy cow.
45-0 victory over Kansas City. It gets worse. Dave Brown scored twice. Kenny Easley and Keith Simpson also had a pick six. All of the scores coming from longer than 50 yards. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Now, I don't know if they had driven across midfield on all those drives, but probably on at least a couple of them. 45-0, Seattle went off. Fantasy defense incalculable that day, Tony.
That's pretty good.
A lot of points that was. Famous birthdays for this date, 1975. Happy 40th to Orlando Pace, 7-time Pro Bowl. Three-time first-team All-Pro, and to me, a bit of a surprise that he didn't get into the Hall of Fame this year. I believe it was his first year on the ballot. He was a finalist. They expect that to be rectified in short order. 1981, Vince Wilfork, Mammoth Man. I remember at our old place, he came in and sat in with myself and Travis Newsom on a show in studio and barely fit through the doorway. And that was coming out of college, and he was working out all the time for the combine. He is just a big boy.
He is.
5 Pro Bowls, 1-time a first-team All-Pro. 1986, Brandon LaFell born on this date, former LSU wide receiver, former Carolina Panther, now catching passes from Tom Brady. He turns 29 today. How about this? Brian Walters of your Jacksonville Jaguars will sit down with me coming up at noon for an interview for the pregame show. He turns 28 years old today, born in 1987, same day, 1 year earlier than Dez Bryant. And pretty much the same caliber of guy, wouldn't you say? Dez, Brian Walters, I think so, absolutely. Brian's been more productive than Dez this year, let's put it that way. Dez Bryant turns 27 years old today himself. Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, bringing you this date in football history. Re-roofs, repairs, you have issues with your roof, or you just need it checked out, call Bob Roberts and Company at 287-7756 for your home, for your place of business. License number CCC056797 for First Coast Roofing. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
A couple pieces of player news before we get into some other stuff around the NFL. Keenan Allen has been placed on injured reserve for the San Diego Chargers, so plan your lineups accordingly from here on out with that San Diego pass offense, because they're probably still going to throw the ball about 50 times a game, so somebody's going to see their targets rise dramatically. Joseph Randle has been released by the Dallas Cowboys as they get set to take on the Philadelphia Eagles this weekend. Of course, this will be the return for DeMarco Murray to Dallas. He was embarrassed in their game up there in Philadelphia. 13 carries for 2 yards against Dallas earlier this year, but this is his return to Dallas. We'll see what it looks like for him, but Joseph Randle has been released in the middle of everything going on with him by the Dallas Cowboys. Cleveland Browns head coach Mike Pettine has announced that Johnny Manziel will start for the Browns tomorrow night On Thursday night football against the unbeaten Cincinnati Bengals, Brown starter Josh McCown is dealing with a rib injury. Hasn't been able to practice during this short week. Manziel won his only start so far in 2015, beating Tennessee in week two while McCown was out with a concussion. The Indianapolis Colts have fired their offensive coordinator, Pep Hamilton. This was Hamilton's third season as the offensive coordinator with Indianapolis, the fifth consecutive year that he and Andrew Luck had worked together in that capacity, going back to Luck's final 2 years with the Stanford Cardinal. Rob Chudzinski takes over the play calling duties for the Indianapolis Colts going forward.
That's an interesting name to watch. Obviously, his name has been connected as a possibility to go become the next head coach at the University of Miami. And, you know, now that he's in this position, you figure he's going to ride out the rest of the season with the Colts. And if they can do something, get to the postseason, he can reinvigorate the offense. If Chuck Pagano's not brought back, he may be an in-house candidate, at least to get an interview for the head coaching spot there. He spent 1 year as the head coach in Cleveland. I mean, Pagano's in a situation where, barring even an AFC South championship, because the record's not going to be what they have come to expect. They've already lost as many games as they have each of the last 3 years, the Indianapolis Colts. I think Pagano's back in Indy. I don't think that's any shocking revelation. I think it would take something pretty surprising at this point, maybe a playoff run of multiple wins, to bring him back to Indianapolis.
I think the expectations for the Colts inside that building before the season started were they were going to go to the Super Bowl
or bust.
Yeah, I think that was the expectation. I don't think that you change that expectation just because of what you've seen in the first month and a half, 2 months. I think you're even more disappointed because of the results that you've been getting. A division title is not going to be enough, especially in this awful AFC South. It's not going to be enough. I don't even think winning a playoff game is going to be enough for the Colts. If they made the AFC Championship game again, maybe there's a consideration to keep Pagano, but I think outside of that, he's gone.
Look, and, you know, now that Shad Khan has basically put the kibosh on any speculation, I mean, you can speculate, feel free to think anything you like, but any realistic speculation that there'd be any coaching changes or staff changes during the season, that's not going to happen now. It's pretty clear. But for anyone who was surprised that that kind of conversation was coming up, I know Jeff Logman said, hey, you can't point to the record at the time. I know we had that conversation. Gus was like 8-29. Well, Ken Whisenhunt was 3-20. He didn't get as many games. He got run out in Tennessee this week. Okay,
yeah.
Pep Hamilton, correct me if I'm wrong, must have done a decent job when they've been winning 11 games every single year, and he's had a bad 7-game stretch. Now, granted, it's been below what they expected and the level of play they've come to expect, but basically a bad half season got him run out as offense coordinator in Indianapolis. The NFL doesn't wait around, man, if you're not getting the job done, and you're seeing that in this very division.
Well, I think it's about the expectations that were there in Indianapolis, and in the middle of the season, I don't think they're going to pull the trigger on Pagano, right? And it's,
well, right, there's no point in doing it when
right.
he's a lame duck.
It's, well, we got it. It's almost like they needed a sacrificial lamb, right, for what has happened through the first half of this season, and especially, look, they come back. It felt like on that Monday night game that as soon as the game got put in the hands of just Andrew Luck, and it was about the two-minute offense and fast, fast, fast. And really, that's what they've been for 3 years. Andrew Luck has been a guy who turns the ball over, and overcomes all that adversity at the end of football games. And it looked like the same guy on Monday night. So I don't know if they feel like in the building that Pep Hamilton is getting in the way of Andrew Luck at this point. I know Andrew Luck and his continued just overthrows and bad decisions throwing into double coverage killed Pep Hamilton. It got him fired, and I'm not sure that the play calling is what was wrong in Indianapolis as much as it was. Andrew Luck has been making awful decisions all season long.
Right. Now, maybe the offense does improve from this point on, but it may have improved anyway because it's been so bad through 8 games for that football team. But when you say they had to make a move, I mean, the only reason I think you should make that move if you're them is because you think you're going to get better results with this other guy, right? I mean, who cares? Are the Colts fans going to stop coming to football games? They're still in first place. They're still the favorite to win the division. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know who you're placating with that move.
I don't trust Indianapolis to be making the right football decisions. And that's why I think it feels like a move where it's somebody's going to be the sacrificial lamb right now 7 games in. I'm not saying I would have made that decision.
But who makes that decision? That's got to be something Pagano signs off on.
Yeah, I don't know. With where that situation is in Indianapolis, I don't know. I don't know if Pagano is the guy that has to sign off on that, or if it's enough that Grigson wants him gone, or what the communication level is between Irsay and everything else that's going on in that organization. It feels like complete chaos from the outside looking in, what's happening in Indianapolis right now, and Pep Hamilton's the first victim of that chaos. Yeah,
Irsay tweeted out a link to the story yesterday, and just a two-word tweet, personnel change. There you go. Personnel change.
Yeah.
Hey, look, I hope chaos continues to reign.
Me too.
In Indianapolis, but most importantly, the Jags need to take advantage of it. They're positioned to take advantage
of it.
They are.
It's funny, though, looking at the South. I mean, a week and a half ago, Houston cuts their backup quarterback, who was their starting quarterback at one point this year because he decided not to show up for a team plane when they were going down to Miami. The next week, you're watching a head coach get fired. In the division, the Colts continue to struggle. They have that comeback, and then they collapse in overtime with the interception again from Andrew Luck that puts Carolina in a position to go to undefeated. Now the Colts are sitting there at 3-5, and they fire their offensive coordinator.
Right.
It is madness in the AFC South right now, and it's a bunch of teams that are looking at a division that's within everybody's grasp, and it feels like they're trying to push the right lever or button or whatever to get their teams to wake up, and I'm not sure that any of them are going to over the second
I'm
half
not
of the
either,
season.
But I guarantee you, Tony, I guarantee you even Tennessee feels that they can win this division, and
that's why they
made the change.
Yeah.
They say, look, we got to break out of the stagnation right now. The opportunity is still there. I wonder what would happen, honestly. The timing of that is a little weird, right? Wisenhunt gets fired yesterday. Do they wait and see if the Colts win on Monday Night Football and put them, you know, further out? By losing on Monday Night Football, they're only two games back, right? I mean, is that a factor with Tennessee getting rid of Wisenhunt? Because typically you'd make that move on a Monday, right? Your first day of the week, you'd clean house, get the new guy in there, get him started as soon as possible. The timing of it a little bit strange, I think.
No, it was. And the record for Wisenhunt was bad. The stat I heard yesterday where he's won the two openers the last 2 years with Tennessee. So without 7 months the game plan, he's 1-21. That's what Wisenhunt's record was.
He's a hell of an offseason game planner, though, man, because they put the beating on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to open up the season. We were like, wow, really? Mariota's going to throw 4 touchdowns on 16 attempts? This is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But not so unbelievable at this point in time. All right, 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships is this. Assign grades to the Jaguars offense, defense, and special teams here kind of at the midway point of the season, even though they haven't played half of their games yet. The bye week kind of constitutes the midway point. So where they stand now, you could base that on what you expected them to be and what they are in comparison to that, or you can grade them any way you like. Just give us your grades, and if you want to include the rationale, that's fine as well for the offense, defense, and special teams. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at Everbank. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Metro Rooter brings you Jaguars today every Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Metro Rooter for all sides plumbing jobs, in-home, commercial, industrial, septic systems, you name it, even restaurant grease trap service. If it has to do with plumbing, Metro Rooter's got your answers and your solutions. Same-day service, weekends included. The reason they've been in business serving Jacksonville since 1978 is because they have the right people with the right equipment to get the job done. They're the people I trust to come to my home when I've got plumbing issues. I just pick up the phone and call 695-1911, 695-1911, Metro Rooter, the call to make, or visit MetroRooter.com. They are our Wednesday sponsor here of Jaguars today on 1010XL.
Kind of an interesting note in the broader world of the NFL. Tom Coughlin addressed the New York media here in the last 30 minutes or so, talking about the game coming up this weekend against Tampa. It sounds like JPP is going to play this week. The way he's talking, he said he looks good in practice physically. He's in shape. It sounds more and more like Jason Pierre-Paul is probably going to make his 2015 debut in Tampa this week.
I'm sure you've seen the picture of the hand.
Yeah.
Pretty mangled as far as that goes. And if you needed, some people need to see it, Tony, before they believe it. You know, if you needed any more evidence as to why you probably, I'm guessing, shouldn't mix, say, alcohol and fireworks, or just be careful what you're doing if you're going to have that home pyrotechnics display.
Was it in Tampa or Miami that he blew it off?
It was somewhere down in South Florida.
Because he went to USF,
yeah.
So he could have a lot of family in that Tampa area. I don't know. This may be like a homecoming for him and his aunt this weekend when he goes down to Tampa Bay.
Interesting. You know, they do a pretty good job reattaching digits. I'm guessing there was not anything left to reattach.
I'm guessing.
In the case of the club. And that guy lost a lot of money. And, you know, ultimately maybe some quality of life down the line. We'll see about that. But he definitely lost a bunch of money.
Yeah.
You know, you're mentioning Keenan Allen going on injury reserve. And for fantasy leaguers out there, that makes Malcolm Floyd a hot pickup. I know Tyler Devitt has him going against me this week. He did not, however, get D'Angelo Williams off the waiver wire.
I was trying.
Quick aside into the fantasy realm, D'Angelo Williams, I think he's going to be a borderline top five guy the rest of the way.
I think he could be. That offense is that good.
It's that you look at three of the top four running backs in points per week right now were Jamal Charles, Arian Foster, Le'Veon Bell, behind Devontae Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
They're all gone. They're all out of the mix. Put Freeman, put Gurley at the top of the list. After that, it's anybody's guess week to week, and I think you're right. In that offense, he's already shown what he can do early
good.
In the season. He was outstanding.
First 2 weeks, he was good.
I was without Martavis Bryant in there as well. So, and a note as well, you know, FanDuel and DraftKings, you hear us talk about FanDuel all the time on this program. FanDuel's a sponsor of the Jaguars. DraftKings runs advertisements on this station. I know Amanda Borges is an endorser for them. There are a lot of people out there that I know that enjoy playing weekly, daily fantasy, however you want to term it. I love it as well. But there are also a lot of people that think, man, why don't you throw an ad up on TV, right? why don't you saturate the market with your advertisements? From what I understand, both companies are getting ready to take a major step back on that front. They're not shuttering up the business. They're just they're going to dedicate less to advertising probably because with all the questions percolating about the industry itself, does it need to be regulated? Will it continue to be legal in every state? It's legal in the state of Florida. I know that right now, but Florida is one of the states that's looking into the long-term legality and whether or not that needs to be regulated. So expect it to not be as quite in your face as it's been in recent days. But I'm with you. I love it. It's a blast, particularly when you come out of a weekend that we just came out of where you lose Le'Veon Bell for the year, you lose Keenan Allen for the year, you lose Matt Forte for a period of time.
I mean,
big name guys going down. It's frustrating. It's the kind of thing that makes you throw your hands up and wish next season we're here already in season-long fantasy sometimes. And look, we get it. It's not the most important thing in the world, but it's a fun pastime. Hey, a lot of people would say football itself is not the most important thing in the world. It doesn't, you know, other than your own personal enjoyment and entertainment, how much does it directly impact you? It may, particularly if you're a business owner in this town, but you get the point I'm trying to make, I hope, anyway, that you'll see a lot less of that, I think, and hear a lot less of that in the coming weeks and months. It'll be interesting to see where that whole industry goes with that. 641-1010, if you want to get in the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, is open for business. And today, talking grades for this team, offense, defense, special teams. Tony, as John Osier said when he was with us here about 20, 25 minutes ago, difficult to give the defense. He said anything other than a low C. I don't even know if that's not being generous with this team. How would you grade the overall defense, factoring in expectations, factoring in the offense at times, putting him in bad positions? You can factor in injuries. You can factor in anything you like. How would you grade them?
I told you and everybody, when Dante Fowler Jr. got hurt, that this team last year with the sack number they had, I expected it to be cut at least in half, if not even more this season. I thought it would be a struggle for them to get into the mid-20s in sacks this year, and that's what you're seeing from this team. So from what my expectation was from a pass rush perspective, I'm seeing exactly what I thought I'd see, honestly, with this football team. That doesn't mean the grade's good, but I'm seeing exactly what I thought I'd see. I think you're seeing a couple of potential emerging stars in Aaron Colvin and Telvin Smith. They've been okay against the run through the first half. They've had, obviously, issues against the pass. You're not seeing as much of the just flat-out blown assignments that you saw through the first couple of years here in the Gus Bradley regime. So they're better. I do think they're better on that side of the ball. But still, it's hard to give them much of a grade. I mean, it's certainly not a high grade. So I'd go C minus, D, somewhere in that kind
of
level.
So would I. And really, how many sacks do you think they're on pace for this year, right now?
They're probably on pace for, I think they got, what, 15 or something in that range?
They've got 16 through 7 games.
Yeah.
Right? So a little over 32, two a game, right?
Yeah, so mid-30s.
Right? Let's say they go out and get 3 this weekend against the Jets, right? Put them at 19 through 8 games. They'd be on pace for 38 sacks. That's not that far off last season's total. I'm not saying the pass, trust me, believe me, the pass rush has not been effective, and we noted that plenty of times last year. While the total was good, the consistent pressure wasn't always there with this football team.
It's even worse this year.
Oh, there's no answer. There's nothing other than sending more guys, which I think you will see, and I think you may see a spike in the sack totals because of that. Now, will they end up giving up some big plays? Well, they're already giving up a lot of points. They're giving up second most points in the National Football League behind Detroit. So I'm willing to risk that if I'm Bob Babich and take some of those chances and kind of send the hounds after them a little bit, particularly this week if you either have A, Ryan Fitzpatrick, who may have issues gripping the football, right? You want to make him make quick decisions, ball handling, if he's in there. B, Geno Smith, who you know hangs on to the football too long on a regular basis. Or C, Bryce Petty, who is as raw as they come and not ready to play in the National Football League. Honestly, if you told me today that Bryce Petty is going to be the lead quarterback, and I don't think he will be because the Jets have not gone out and signed a quarterback this week. They worked out some wide receivers. So I think they have a feeling at least one of those guys will be ready, if not both of them. But a Petty play, Tony, you could almost guarantee a victory is the way I feel as strongly about how ineffective he would be. I would say almost because this team has been in some favorable positions and hasn't always taken advantage of them.
And if they had a day where their run defense was as bad as it was against Tampa,
you can't guarantee anything then.
Right. I mean, it's one of those things where we were talking about going into the Buffalo game. It wasn't that you could point to this is where the weakness is with this football team. It was their weakness seemed to be every week whatever the other team's strength they decided they wanted it to be that particular week, which is distressing, you know, when you're watching this football team, because it's, well, what do they do well? I don't know. What is their identity on defense? I don't know. What do they stop when they want to stop it? I don't know. Like, there are no answers for those questions right now, which is why it's hard to give them any kind of good grade. It's a D, and it's more probably pointing down than it is up, even with that D, because they haven't found a way to stop anything the opposing teams want to be able to do on a week-to-week basis right now.
I agree. The Jags worked out a couple of kickers, and as you heard Gus Bradley on Monday, and we played some of those comments for you yesterday, say the thought process of signing a new kicker went out the door after they saw them. All right, which, you know, while there are guys out there, and some people feel, and I've seen this expressed, I don't care who, just got to get somebody new. I understand that sentiment from a fan's perspective when you're frustrated and things are not going well and the guy, you feel like, well, you know, this guy's giving us nothing. It can't be worse. Generally, it can always be worse. Generally. Not always. Sometimes you do hit rock bottom and you got to make a move. I'm not saying I believe Jason Myers is the answer. He hasn't proven to be the answer. He may turn out to be, but I have no issue kind of cycling through the available kickers that are out there. There've got to be more than Randy Bullock and Zach Hocker, you know, as far as guys that have had a little experience or guys you think could come in and contribute. I mean, you found Jason Myers basically out of nowhere. There are other guys out there. I'm not, you know, obviously for right now, they're going with what they've got, and maybe it'll be on a week-by-week basis, but I'm still keeping my eyes open to upgrade that position.
It feels like if they brought somebody in new and that guy made his first, I don't know, extra point, that you feel probably more solid about that guy than you do about Myers right now, because the background on him is that he's struggling. And so every time he walks out there on the field, it doesn't matter if it's an extra point, if it's a 25-yard field goal, there's this question in the back of your mind, is this the guy that's going to make this kick? And when you talk about the Jaguars special teams, honestly, they've made one play this year. That 59-yard field goal, is the biggest highlight of the year for any special teams unit because they haven't covered kicks, they haven't returned kicks, they haven't covered punts, they haven't returned punts. They've got nothing going on from that perspective. The special teams has flat out cost them a game with Jason Myers missing those two field goals up there against Indianapolis. I mean, the special teams is a big, fat, glaring F for what this team has done through the first 7 weeks of the season.
I'm with you. A couple of quick notes here from the world of Twitter. Rich Samini, who writes for ESPN now, covers the Jets for their NFL Nation coverage, says there have been some troubling comments coming from the Jets' defensive players since their poor performance in Oakland. Linebacker David Harris said there was a lack of hustle, and defensive end Muhammad Wilkerson followed that up yesterday in a radio interview saying that, quote, guys were loafing. Seeing guys loaf and miss tackles, that's not this defense. Samini wraps up by saying stinging words, to be sure. That could go one of two ways. That can snowball, right? And you can have a situation where you've got that. Now you've got guys pointing fingers, calling other guys out. Does it go that direction? Or will this be a leadership moment? And I think, honestly, what comes after it will determine how it's viewed. Should Wilkerson have been talking about this publicly? Do you keep that kind of stuff in the locker room? That's always debated. Sure. Players think you should never talk publicly about these kind of things until you do. And then, you know, if you've got guys, I mean, that's an indictment that you don't want to ever hear. Look, you can make mistakes, you can drop passes, you can lack concentration, whatever. Loafing, not giving full effort is, there's no way around it. That's completely unacceptable, and that should, unless you're exceptionally talented, and those kind of guys get second, third, tenth chances, should get you cut, quite frankly.
Yeah, look, I can't remember the last time we got this late into a game week with the Jags that I had this little feel for how I thought a game would go. I have no idea what to expect in this game between Jacksonville and the Jets, mostly because
do you ever really?
I have an idea of what I expect to happen.
What did you expect against Buffalo?
I expected a sloppy game, honestly, is what I expected. Now, I didn't necessarily get that. I didn't expect the Jags to do what they did defensively in that game. I expected them to blitz more, and E.J. Manuel stinks, and they're going to have an opportunity to win that game. That was my expectation for that Buffalo game. This Jets game, I don't know who's playing quarterback.
Right.
I don't know where their defense's head is right now. I don't know what the Jags are going to look like coming off a bye where they came back in that Buffalo game. I don't know what it's going to look like when A-Rob is not going to have the opportunities probably to make the same kind of plays that he has to this point this season because he's looking at Darrell Revis, and where does that leave them offensively? There are so many questions about what this game's going to look like. I have no feel for what to expect out of this Jacksonville Jets game, and that's a weird spot to be in.
All right, we will come back and take a look at the weekly injury report with Dr. Stephen Lucy from Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute. That's coming up, as well as the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking you today to assign a grade to the offense, defense, and special teams. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars today on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious!
On 1010 XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
All right, let's head to the Metro Diner Chat Counter. Right now, Dr. Stephen Lucy, one of 31 physicians at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the exclusive sports medicine providers for your Jacksonville Jaguars, joins us. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute. Doc, how are you?
Good.
Did you miss me last week? Don't lie now.
Tony did really well.
I bet he did. That's a big fat no, and I would have not accepted any other answer as being truthful out of you. You know, I know you guys discussed St. Beatles last week, Marquise Lee. There's nothing new, fortunately, that we're aware of to report on the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Absolutely. That's what bye weeks are for, to get healthy,
get hurt. Right? Let's hope that's the case. Let's hope they're getting healthier. We should have Rashad Greene on the practice field in some capacity today. But let's talk about the Jets, because they come in, and the quarterback position is pretty banged up. And let's start with Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is the starting quarterback for them this year, and he's played pretty well this season so far. So would be a big blow to them if they didn't have him. He had from what I heard, some torn ligaments in his left thumb, and his head coach Todd Bowles said after the season at some point he's going to need surgery on that. Fitzpatrick said he was going to have trouble taking snaps from under center and handing the ball off. He didn't have the grip strength in his hand, and it may have been a pain tolerance issue as well. I'm not sure with him last week. Without examining him, we know you haven't. So realistically, when you hear a quarterback has this type of injury in his non-throwing hand, how much of a long shot or not is it that he could suit up this upcoming week?
Well, you know, this is a classic gamekeeper's thumb. You see a lot of it with ski pole injuries, with snow
skiing. What is it called?
Gamekeeper's thumb, and it's a tear of the ligaments on the inside of that big knuckle of your thumb. And if you go to pinch your index finger, like that's what stabilizes your thumb to give you that good strength. So on a throwing arm, this would be a disaster. On the non-throwing arm, you know, the guy's got to be able to take snaps both under center and in the shotgun. And you've seen on a number of occasions this year what happens when the guy fumbles a shotgun snap. So I'm sure that's the initial problem. A quarterback, as much as he touches a ball, other than tape, you really can't splint him much because that's going to affect his ability to play. So we'll just have to see. This is one of these things that may require surgery now or at the end of the season, but I'm sure they're going to give it a go at some point. It just doesn't sound like it's going to be this week, but who knows?
So your best guess, and that's what it is. We understand that. I mean, you're not examining these guys, is that you wouldn't expect to see Ryan Fitzpatrick this week.
I think it'd probably be certainly less than 50%, but it wouldn't surprise me that he could still play some later in the year. But the vibe we're getting is that he's not going to be able to play, but, you know, who knows?
Geno Smith, I would think the Jets expect one of these guys to play because they haven't worked out quarterbacks this week. And Bryce Petty, the young kid out of Baylor, the only other guy that they have on the roster right now. So Geno Smith has, what, a shoulder bruise, like a deep shoulder bruise? And I guess we don't know the severity, but does it kind of coincide with what James Sample's been dealing with here?
Yeah, from what I can tell, they're very similar injuries. Both of them probably took a shot directly on the shoulder. And if you feel up there, you know, there's not a whole lot of padding. You can feel some bones in there that get bruised. There's a big portion of your deltoid. And I know with James, he's been struggling to get the motion and the strength back because all these little shoulder things, some partial rotator cuff strains, tears, a little subluxation of the shoulder, what the docs are looking for is a full range of motion and strength because you don't want to put a guy out there that cannot protect himself, cannot hit, and cannot take a hit. And so I think for a quarterback, as opposed to a safety, the quarterback isn't delivering hits, but he's got to be able to take a hit, and this is his non-throwing arm. So I get the sense that of the two of them, probably Geno may have a better chance of getting in there and playing because it's probably more of just a pain tolerance at the quarterback's non-throwing arm.
I don't know what I'd rather have from a Jaguar perspective. You'd rather have the better quarterback, who I think is Fitzpatrick right now, but maybe with an issue with ball security, right? And then you've got another guy who's got his own issues with ball security having nothing to do with any injuries, Doc. So I guess, look,
true.
I think Geno is probably the preferred option, although he didn't play terribly. He makes some bad plays, some glaringly bad plays. Overall, he moved the offense, but he does hang on to the football too long. He stares down guys. He has his issues. So we'll see if the Jags are able to take advantage of another team's misfortunate quarterback. They've certainly had a run of their own luck by facing teams that have had the misfortune of injuries at quarterback.
Absolutely. Sometimes good and sometimes not so good, unfortunately.
That's true. Keep it up, though. Dr. Stephen Lucy, one of 31 physicians at the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the exclusive sports medicine providers for your Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute. Doc, even though I'm back and you're probably not as happy as you could be, good to see you anyway.
Good to see you back, too.
There he goes. Dr. Stephen Lucy from JOI with your weekly injury report. All right, Tony. Fan feedback spotlight today. It was pretty simple and straightforward, asking folks to give a grade to the offense, defense, and special teams for the Jacksonville Jaguars this year. It's brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. What kind of feedback did we get?
From Irish Jaguar, offense C+, defense D-, and special teams an E.
Now, we could do a show on this whole Irish grading system, could we not?
Yes, I think we could, but E is a step above F and a step below C3.
C3, he sent us the grading scale. What does E translate to on a percentage basis?
It was something like, it was like 40.
40 to like, no, I think it was like 30 to 39%,
something
like
that.
Something
in there, yeah.
It was very bad.
It was very low.
E.
Very, very low. From Isaiah, offense has been a C, not a good run game yet. Defense a D, not causing turnovers. Special teams a B. I don't know how special teams is a B. From Daniel, offense gets a B minus. Defense a solid B, special teams a D, team grade is a C plus to a B minus. From Brian, offense B, defense C, special teams incomplete. From Stoff Prime, offense C plus, defense is a D, special teams summer school needed. From Joey, offense B, defense C, special teams F. Hard to grade offense and defense, too inconsistent. Teams is consistently bad. From Cristiano, offense 6, defense 4, special teams 3. Grades in Brazil vary from 0 to 10.
Oh, I was going to say, wow. Is that a G in Ireland? I'm not
so
sure what that
would
be.
It's like a 60, 40, and 30.
Okay.
Essentially for offense, right. Defense, especially.
Which, again, in Ireland might be an E.
It might be. From Eric, offense a solid B, better than last year but still working. Defense is a D and special teams is F. Too many missed kicks. From Demetrius, offense B minus, defense D, special teams F, coaching D. With the division in flux, we have chance to be special. And from Rob, that's not a question, but anyway, B for offense, C minus for defense,
yeah.
F maybe a low D.
Wise guy.
For the special teams.
I get it. It's not a direct question, but we're asking you something. We have 140 characters to work with there, pal. On the Twitter sphere, Chad Cox on Facebook said offense C, defense D, special teams F. That's why they're special. Ha ha. Louis Sosorio, D plus for the defense, down from last year's B minus. F for special teams, down from a year ago's C minus. And extra points shouldn't be a nerve-wracking play in the NFL. And C plus from the offense, up from a year ago. D to C plus doesn't seem like a big. I think there's been a bigger leap on the offensive side, a significantly bigger leap. They're scoring 6 more points a game.
Yeah.
That's a big jump. In the National Football, you're roughly 6 more points per game.
And that's about, like, we talked about it all offseason. It's like, man, if they can just improve by about a touchdown this year, well, they're doing that. Offensively, they're doing that. They are accomplishing that, at least. And from the extra points perspective, I think I heard on Monday Night Football, after Graham Gano missed that one for Carolina, which could have put them in a much worse situation in that football game than it wound up being, with Indianapolis just needing the field goal there at the end. But Gano, that was the 30th extra point missed this season. So through the first 8 weeks of the NFL season, there's been 30 missed. Through the last 4 years combined before that, there were 32 missed. So
definitely a factor.
They wanted to add that kind of factor to these NFL games. It's working.
I don't have a problem with it either. I don't think it's become cartoonish. I don't think it's look, it's
me
just
either.
A longer kick. Make the damn kick, okay?
Yeah.
And look, and again, in the end, I think Gano missing that extra point, I mentioned this yesterday with Joe and Hacker, I think that could have helped the Jaguars. You know, bear with me here as he misses the extra point. It remains a 3-point game after Indy scores late, and they had moved the ball seemingly effortlessly down inside the Carolina 10 where they stalled on fourth down. If they're down 4, they're going to take one more shot. And I don't know, you know, look, you're in a coin flip at that point in time from that close in, whether they win the game or don't win the game. And as it was, they made the by-the-book football play, kick the field goal, send it to overtime, and despite scoring first in overtime, thank goodness for the new rules, Carolina able to come back and win it. So I do think, at least potentially, we don't know what would have happened. Maybe they throw a pick in on fourth down and the game's over before it gets to overtime. But I think certainly that played a role, potentially, in the Colts losing, and therefore that's good for the Jags. It has been an interesting week, as we pointed out, or really a series of weeks with the quarterback shuffling in Houston, the head coach being fired in Tennessee, now the offensive coordinator getting the axe in Indianapolis. As somebody said earlier, who'd have thunk the Jags would be the most stable franchise in the AFC South, at least in terms of major changes like that. You're absolutely right up until this point in time. Metro Rooter brings you the show every Wednesday. We thank them, our Wednesday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Appreciate John Osier stopping by from Jaguars.com, as well as Dr. Stephen Lucy from Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute. For Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. We've got XL Primetime coming your way next, right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.